is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Boost Academy, AROC-X, Ron's Electric Motors, Wendy's, and the Water and Sewage Department.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution. This is Joey Gaskin sitting in for Juan McCartney yet another Friday. Welcome. Busy week, crazy week. First of all, it's great to be back. It's great to be talking to you guys again. My understanding is that Juan is out. He may have celebrated, I think it was a 52nd birthday, 54th. I can't seem to remember the actual number, but what I do know is that old men need breaks, and so Juan has been out for some time, and I am happy to be sitting in today. Happy to be sitting in, especially given the historic nature of this week. For some of us, a surprise. For others, we've been tracking the rumors now for weeks, months. It feels good to actually have gotten through this and to have some certainty. So big week. Lots to talk about in the first hour. I'm going to open up the phone lines. We can talk about the election announcement, the call for election, the dissolution of parliament. And I want to hear from undecided voters, right, which make up a large portion of the electorate right now. Our numbers at Open Current, for those of you who don't know, I'm senior partner at Open Current, a local research and insights government and public relations firm. We do national polling all the time. And our numbers tell us that there are still a ton of Bahamians who intend to vote, but have not decided yet who they are going to vote for. A huge number of folks, right? That was what it was as of August 9th, which is when we got back our latest polling numbers. I want to hear from undecided voters today. You know, what do you think about the move the Prime Minister made yesterday to call an early election, a snap election, a short campaign of less than 4 weeks? When we really get into it, less than 4 weeks, how does that make you feel as an undecided voter? Where are you positioning yourself? What are you looking for from the political parties, of which there are a number, more perhaps than at any other time in Bahamian history, to consider? What are you looking for these political parties, from these political parties? What is important to you? What do you want to hear over the course of the next 4 weeks? So we're going to tackle that in our first hour. In our second hour, we're going to bring on some heavy hitters, those who are helping to define the tourism industry, helping to define our modern Bahamian economy, our gateways on the sea and from the air. We're going to bring some folks on to talk a little bit about how they've been dealing with COVID, the future of the port and the airport, and what that's going to mean for Bahamians, and talk a little bit about what the future is going to be like for us as we move forward, as countries around the world deal with the Delta variant, as just recently, emergency orders here in the Bahamas required cruise ship passengers older than 12 years old to be vaccinated. What is this all going to mean for what people are saying is in a slow but ever-increasing back, getting back to normal around the tourism industry, a kind of getting back to status quo. So our phone lines are open. I'm really interested in talking to undecided voters today. You can reach us at 323-6232. That's 323-6232. 325-4316. 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us. Our text line is powered by BTC, and that is 422-GR96 or 422-4796. It would be great to hear from you guys today. I know that I was slightly taken aback. At the beginning of this week, we heard rumors that elections were on the way. We got a slight taste of it on Wednesday with the prorogation of Parliament in what was a two-step process, right? Untraditionally so. Two-step process. All of the announcements could have been made at the same time on Wednesday. But a third announcement was made yesterday, essentially dissolving Parliament and taking us to election. We're getting some comments in the text messages. Juan, you are apparently missed. They say they need to get you back. They tired of us sitting in your seat. Also, apparently it was Juan's 45th birthday. I said 52nd. And I'm sure I can get a call from Juan after the show for that. I said 52nd, maybe 54th. But yes, we are heading to an election. New session of the House, as the front page of The Guardian says, starts October 6th. And like I said, we know from our numbers at Opium Current that there is a host of undecided voters, people who are still not sure who they're going to vote for. And we have less than 4 weeks to make that decision. The other thing is, it seemed like political parties were just waiting for the announcement. I mean, driving here to the studio, the political signs are going up fairly quickly. If you are on Twitter, a new PLP ad launched today featuring the coaches that are a part of its roster. But, you know, not just PLP ads and PLP signs, the FNM signs have gone up as well. In fact, you can't drive 20 feet in Nassau right now without seeing a political sign, a campaign sign. So it seems like people were ready to go. Things were in the can. Everybody was just waiting for the trigger to be pulled. And like I said, at the beginning of the week, we had some indication that this was coming. In fact, I think we got the voting date right. We had heard on Wednesday that elections would be held September 16th, but we had heard that it would be called on Wednesday. That did not happen. That did not happen at all. One of our texters is agreeing with me. Apparently, you do look like you're 52, but you have the wisdom of a 72-year-old, is what he said. The wisdom of a 72-year-old. Texters are texting in, too straight for the FNM. I mean, listen, we know that each of these parties have their base, right? There are people who are going to come out and vote FNM, PLP, no matter what. But again, I'm really interested in giving a voice to folks who are undecided, who are trying to figure out their way through this, especially those who have not voted before, so young voters for whom this may be a second time. What are you looking for in the next 4 weeks from these candidates, from these parties? Are you voting for a party leader? Or is it more important for you to vote for who's representing you in your particular constituency? Are you reading manifestos, if there are manifestos that come out in the next 4 weeks? Are you reading economic plans? Do you expect your MPs to have a plan for your constituency? I see a lot of people, particularly online, saying, you know, we're not voting for leaders. We are voting for the members in our the potential members of parliament in our constituencies, the candidates running to represent us. Is that how you're voting? Or are you more concerned about who will lead us through the crisis that we are currently in as prime minister? I think that that's the big thing, right? Again, BPL workers still protesting as their unrest lingers. So this is, you know, Electrical Workers Union, industrial action. We have heard the prospect of industrial action from the teachers union. We know that our healthcare system is suffering under the weight of those who are unvaccinated, those who are still ill, crowding ICUs, emergency, accident and emergency. Where are we looking for that leader who will walk us through the current crisis that we're facing? Or are you thinking about who is representing you specifically in your constituencies? So again, give us a call. Let us know, especially undecided voters. Where are you landing on this? What are you looking for? That's 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Or you can text us. We got text messages coming in. 422-GR96. Or you can text at 422-4796. People are asking who I am. This is Joey Gaskins. I'm sitting in for Juan McCartney today, even though people want him to return. Juan needs a break. 52-year-olds do need to take some time, some time off from time to time, just to catch themselves. Just to catch themselves. We were also treated, some might say, to a national address by the leader of the opposition yesterday in response to the official opposition, I should say, in response to the Prime Minister's announcement. The leader said that this is the first step taken toward a better day. And if you are on the road, if you have been on the road, you've seen the signs with a very simple phrase, a new day. I think that's what I got that right, right? A new day. And that is pitted against, it's about your future, I think, are the two slogans this year, right? Not as snappy as the people's time, but clearly trying to frame this moment as a decision around the future of the Bahamas and specifically your personal future. Is my brand of leadership what you want to guarantee to secure your future? Or does my brand of leadership, does our party represent a new day in Bahamian politics? Does it signal a change, a fundamental shift, which from my perspective, I think a lot of Bahamians are asking for and see the opportunity in the midst of this crisis as a chance to rework the fundamentals, to take a different approach to the way that we do government in the Bahamas, to the way that we think through our economy, how we approach education. And so these two primary slogans pitted against each other, one about securing your future, one about changing the future, one about a new day. But that's just the two juggernauts, right? Again, this election, we are experiencing, or we are, you know, part of an election that has a host of other independent parties, right? A host of new voices that are crowding into the political discourse. We heard some of that on Wednesday after the announcement or the proclamation of prorogation, where independent candidates and representatives from the non-traditional parties made it very clear that they felt like this was an encroachment on the democratic process, that this was an attempt to silence them when they had a moment to talk about their concerns, to feel represented at the open parliament. So yes, I want to hear from undecided voters because this is going to be an election like none other. Right? I can't read that text message. I don't want to get in trouble for that. But this texter is referring to the Minister of Health, Renwood Wells. They believe that the coalition of independents will win this next election, and they believe that justice will be served once that win happens. right? Is there a chance for these independent parties? You have a DNA who's contested two elections so far, landing just at about, or a little under 14%, I believe. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. You have the Coalition of Independents, the Bahamas Democratic Movement. I mean, again, we've always asked for choice, right? People have always talked about the Bahamas getting out of the two-party system, going beyond just PLP and FNM. And we've been talking about that for decades, but we don't see that result once people leave the voting booth. We don't see that people consider these parties or take these parties seriously on election day. And I wonder if this election will be the first that that happens. As an undecided voter, how serious are you? How seriously are you considering independent parties? Are you looking at them closely? And have they come to your door? Are you seeing, reading, watching, talking to them about their plans for the Bahamas? Again, we know, as we saw yesterday, that the two major parties have, they've got their core supporters built in. They were out in the street yesterday with flags. And again, if you are on the road, you will see cars pulled up on the side of the road, knocking signs into the ground, pasting them on coconut trees and on light poles throughout Nassau. We are very, very much rolling into what people like to refer to as silly season. But again, for the first time in Bahamian history ever like this, this sheer slate of choices, much larger than ever before. Are Bahamians considering these independent parties as options? All of this, of course, is happening within the context, within the environment of a global pandemic. Again, front page of The Guardian, 14 new COVID deaths last night. 14 new COVID deaths reported last night. And new emergency orders published yesterday. New 8 p.m. curfews for Abaco, Andrus, and Exuma. So this election is not happening. Not only is this election different in its composition, this election is different in its context, is historic or historical in its context, right? One texter is writing in, I'm waiting for the commission of inquiry on where the emergency spending money went. Also waiting for some court cases, right? I think that, again, given the context we're in, the question of emergency order spending, where resources have been directed, is going to be a key issue. Will it raise to the level of the phrase we heard echoed consistently in 2017, where the VAT money gone? Will it raise to that level of social narrative, becoming a part of the political discourse over and over again? I don't know. But again, because the context is different that this election will be held in, there's a ton of uncertainty. Well, people are saying that they want to know where the COVID money gone. Right? That context is going to affect us in a number of ways. People are not sure what the health protocols are going to be around casting your vote. Folks are unsure about that here at home, but also abroad, where how you will vote based on your consulate or your embassy has not yet been articulated. So there are questions surrounding that. We got 4 weeks, guys, to make a decision. We have 4 weeks before we get into the voting booth. And again, given the context, given everything that we have been through, especially in the last 2.5 years, Hurricane Dorian, for those who live in Abaco and Grand Bahama, who in many ways are still recovering in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian, to a global pandemic that has shifted the way that we interact with each other on a social level, shifted the way that businesses run in the Bahamas, shifted the way that government runs. What is this going to mean for an election? One texter writes, "In these signs all over the place is stupid, and I wish they would stop. I wonder what the efficacy, what is the efficacy of signs? How much do they convince voters to vote for the party whose signs they see the most? I don't know. I don't know what the stats are on that." This texter says, "You're doing a great job. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. A little out of my element here. I believe there should be a limit on the amount of signage these parties can post because poles and trees cannot vote." I mean, this is another question. You know, when you see these signs on the street, do they have a persuasive effect? Or are you more familiar now with the party slogans than you were yesterday? Because I am. I didn't know what they were. But just the drive, the 5-minute drive between my apartment and the Guardian radio show, I've learned what the PLP and FNM slogans are. As Texas says, "Great show as usual. Who do you think have to lose during the election, Brave or Minnis?" I think Brave, because this is more than likely his last chance to be PM. So the texter is asking, who do you think has more to lose this election? And that's a really good question. I mean, that's about palace intrigue as well. I think, you know, from what I understand internally, there are potential leadership candidates waiting in the wings on both sides. Right? Waiting in the wings on both sides. And on the one hand, you have a prime minister whose leadership is being put to the test. Right? It's his leadership that we are essentially taking a referendum on, and his leadership through two very serious, unprecedented crises. On the other hand, you have some who will say that this is the PLP's election to lose. And to not win would signal deeper issues with the PLP's political future. I don't know if people agree with that. But here we are. One texter is asking, are all of these political signs made from recyclable paper and can they be recycled? This is a good question, actually. Thanks for that. I really do hope that campaigns are thinking about environmental sustainability. I know the signs can't necessarily be biodegradable or else they'll break down right on the roads, right where they are. But I hope campaigns are definitely taking into consideration using environmentally sustainable practices as they advertise during this campaign season. This texter writes, hey, I can't vote for FNM and I can't vote for PLP. So I'm between a rock and a hard place. So I just may not vote. And that's interesting because I had a whole spiel about 5 minutes ago about all the choices that we have this election. Thanks for that, texter. All the choices that we have this election that are not PLP and FNM. And this texter is saying, not even considering them in the text message, right? I'm between a rock and a hard place. I cannot vote FNM. I cannot vote PLP. So I may not vote at all. I wonder how many other undecided voters are feeling that way. This other texter writes, hi, if the PLP is organizing their government the way they are putting out signs, I'm not sure it's a good switch. I'm not sure what you mean by that. Are you saying that the erection of signs have been efficient or not so efficient? Give me a bit more context there. Again, guys, please call in. I want to hear your comments. The signs thing seems to have struck a chord with people. And it's definitely something that I've heard folks talk to me about all morning. Just the speed, how rapid the signs have gone up and how prolific they are. You can call in at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. Or you can text us at 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. Lots of complaints about the flags. This texter says, whoever wins, we need to stop these vaccinations. Clearly, they're not helping. I'm confused by what you mean the vaccinations aren't helping. Helping who? All the scientific evidence seems to suggest that by getting your population vaccinated as one tool in the beating back the pandemic toolbox helps to reduce hospitalization and certainly deaths. Not sure what you mean by that. So give me a bit more evidence, right? I have another text to Joey. Two candidates from the major parties came by my house campaigning, and at the end of the day, none of them were persuasive. If you're bold enough, tell me which constituency that was in. I'm really curious. What constituency are you in where candidates from the two major parties came and you were not persuaded? I'd be curious to hear. All right, phone lines are lighting up. Let me get two more of these text messages out. It seems they are putting signs every 10 feet. That is ludicrous. And one more. Give me a second here. That texter is correct about the environment. They ban us from using plastic bags. But these signs out here look like they're made of plastic, as if we are blind. This other texter is saying the signs are also showing which party has the money and I guess which parties don't. All right, we're going to go to a caller. Caller, welcome. You're live. This is The Revolution. Go for it.
Joey, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing great, Joey. Excellent job you're doing.
Thank you.
I have decided to just sit on the side and allow the platform that you're trying to really bring about the first time and even the undecided voters to call into your show today.
Mm-hmm.
However, I will be negligent in not calling in and to encourage the undecided voter to vote.
Mm.
The power of the vote is so immense that not to vote, and you have the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
To give up that right is not even an option. You should vote.
Mm-hmm.
I tell everyone, look at the platforms, look at the persons who are presenting themselves. There are some who are known, some who are not known. Some who have track records, some who don't have track records.
Mm-hmm.
But let your conscience be your guide. Look at their track record. Look at the platform of the party that they're representing. Mm-hmm. And then make a really good decision to cast a vote
mm-hmm.
towards someone who may be that change, who may be that different.
What do you say to people who say that they don't want to pick it from what in their minds are the lesser of two evils, or that they don't see options in the field? What should they do with their vote, you think?
There are many options out there. But you know what I find so ironic with, mm-hmm. with people is that they say they want change.
Mm.
And yet, when you have a plethora of other parties who are presenting themselves, and like I said, the biggest fear, I think, is the unknown. These persons are unknown.
Mm.
They don't have a track record.
Mm-hmm.
I would still say, go ahead and do your investigations, do your examinations. And if you go around long enough and you ask certain questions and stuff, you can then begin to form an opinion
mm-hmm.
of the type of character that these persons are who are presenting themselves,
mm-hmm.
The type of character that they possibly could have.
Mm.
But not to vote is not an option. In other words, and I'll close on this point, Joey,
okay.
which is very salient. To not cast your vote and allow other persons to cast their vote for you, then guess what? Whatever you get, that is on you.
Yeah. Whatever gets shoveled your way, you have to take it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So please go out there, cast your vote. It is one of the most fundamental basic rights that you have that many people in many other countries are dying for the right to have.
Mm-hmm.
Cast your vote. Thanks for taking my call.
No worries. Thank you very much. And again, you know, I think that's a fantastic point. I definitely understand conscientious objectors, people who don't want to vote and don't feel like they have options. At the same time, though, there is literally an attempt right to the west of us, right, to cut back, to roll back voting rights for people, to make it more difficult for people to vote. So it is an advantage that we have, and it's one of the fundamental rights that we are given as a part of our democracy. I think we have another caller on the line. Caller, you are live. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Go for it.
How are you doing? Is this Mr. Gaskin?
Yes, it is. Good afternoon.
Great show. Great show.
Thank you.
Yeah, my first time calling the show. My concern is, you know, I'm a voter, and I was really surprised at how this whole thing was called, but whatever it is, I blame the Prime Minister. He has some, you know, something up his sleeve. He's using a trick. It has to be tricked because it reminds me of the saying that says, over the web we weave when we try to deceive. You see, so what I think, what he did is going to mess them up. If they, because he seemed to be doing something to really cause the FNM to win by people don't have a chance to go and get registered and don't, you know. There's confusion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because he did that, he may be doing that, but I think it can fall against him for that, because you're weaving a web. You can tangle up yourself. Because anyway, I'm looking at the third party, because I definitely can't look at the PLP and the FNM, even though the PLP is the only option. We definitely can't use the FNM, but we just put the PLP out last time.
Uh-huh.
And I can still feel the effects from that. But they're the only option, and because they are a major party. But I also, I observe another third party, but I think it's very effective.
Which party is that?
It's the Bahamian Evolution.
Mm.
Because out there at the House of Parliament, when they had that gathering, right?
Yeah.
It seems like everybody out there was for Lincoln Bean.
Mm.
It seemed like Ben Lincoln Bean speak, like everybody was behind him. Like it's like the same feeling what you had when Hubert Ingraham came to the people and speaking to the people. But I checked the Bahamian Evolution plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they saying they didn't have a plan, but I'm not hearing anything much about it. Talking about it, but they have a vision 2025, it's really great. And he's talking about a sovereign wealth fund that they're going to create for the Bahamian people.
Right.
And I don't know. It's, to me, I'll prefer to go for the people who looking to put some money in my hand.
Yeah.
Because they saying sovereign wealth fund has a chance.
Yes.
But to me, from what I read. And what I learned about what they say in the Vision 2025,
mm-hmm.
Every Bahamian need to hear that. That's what I feel about it, because you know it's long and detailed to explain it, right? But to me, they convinced me. It convinced me so much that I really wanted the election to be called probably next year, because I feel like the Bahamian Evolution, they didn't really advertise themselves enough.
You feel like they haven't had much of a chance to get out there.
Yes, but a lot of people seem to know them. A lot of people seem to be behind them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at the Bahamian Evolution to be the party,
mm-hmm.
but to do something.
If you vote Bahamian Evolution, is this going to be your first time voting for a third party or a party that's not FNM or PLP? Yeah.
Yes, because the first time I voted in my life, was this last election when I voted out the PLP.
Okay.
You know, and I guess most everyone who voted the last time, they was not really voting for the FNM.
Mm-hmm.
So they like them.
Yeah.
They just voting to try to get the PLP out.
Mm.
But now here again, we have the PLP right here in our face again. Why? Because this government being so faulty, they had so much problems. So the PLP could have jumped back quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But automatically, I think the PLP and the FNM, it's the same thing, because they're running on the same system. They're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's hard to explain.
You're clear, caller. Thanks for the call. Hearing a couple of things, actually. One, you know, this last time I voted just to get the PLP out, this time The FNM didn't deliver on what I needed. I'm looking at third parties and actually reading their plan. Sounds like something that I want. This is the kind of conversation I want to hear from undecided voters, people who are considering new options or not sure which direction to go in. I hear my background music. Again, feel free to call in, guys. We will be back after this break. I'm Joey Gaskins. This is The Revolution. We'll be back in a few.
No matter how careful you are, sometimes accidents happen. When it comes to your auto insurance coverage, we know what you need. At J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we provide superior customer service through a quick and efficient claims department that you can trust to get you quickly and safely back on the road again. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Are you ready? August 23rd at 9 a.m., you can begin investing with as little as $25 in an international technology company and an international food franchise on awacx.com. What do you need to get started? Just go to awacx.com to sign up by clicking on Start Investing. So what are you waiting for? Let's go! AWACX, moving people from consumers to owners. Regulated by the Securities Commission of the Bahamas.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and generators back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them 242-356-0249.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon again. This is Joey Gaskins sitting in for Juan McCartney on The Revolution. We are talking to undecided voters, folks who are still trying to figure out, now that an election has been called, what direction they will cast their vote in. That's this hour. In the next hour, we will have Vernice Joaquin on, the CEO and president of the Nassau Airport Development Company. We will also be joined by Mike Mora, who is the CEO of the Nassau Cruise Port. We're going to be talking about what COVID has meant for air and sea travel, what this means for our tourism industry, and what the future is going to look like. Let's get back to this topic about elections, because we got callers on the line. Caller, you're live. We're talking to undecided voters, people who are trying to figure out their vote. Caller, you're live. This is The Revolution.
Hey, good afternoon, Joey.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, man. Backing up a man. Supporting some of those callers which you had a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to this election, I don't feel the Bahamas have no hope in no traditional parties because, you know, they, this just my view, they demonstrated that they're not really interested in growth, right? They're interested in, and you could almost say stagnation, you know, because for a nation as young as ours, we should have been a little further ahead. You know, by now, after four prime ministers, right? So, I believe this is the best time opportunity we can have for third parties to capture the attention moving forward. You know, because we done been bamboozled the days other parties for the last 48.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we have to look at persons like the third party.
Yeah.
Right now, which one of them?
I was going to ask you which ones are you looking at specifically? Are you looking at all of them equally? Do you have some favorites in mind?
Well, I got some favorites. You know, I got Lincoln and Mama Mine. Though, mm-hmm. You know, they I have them there, and then I have the DNA there, and you know, just independence. Mm-hmm. So. I have 28 days to see which of those three I can be casting, but the other two ones they fate will have already came to them. So I mean, it comes to me.
Yeah. So you're not even considering the two major parties right now, is what you're saying?
No, not at all. I don't believe that's where they are.
Yeah.
Right. That's the fight we're digging up, the challenge digging up moving forward.
Are you hearing other folks in your circle of friends, your social circle, talking the same way?
Just about every place, every angle I go.
Mm.
Now, what is gonna happen at the end of the day is the next thing. But that statement is being made everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, we tired of the PLP, we tired of the FNL. You know, they ain't making no sense. Make it make sense, right? So at the end of the day, the only way we can be able to make this make sense and stop being people would have the identity of being insane people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Continue doing the same thing, looking for
different
results, right? We're gonna have to come away from that,
yeah.
Right? If only for this 5 years. Upcoming, we're going to have to come away from that because we have to send a message to both of these parties that, like, hey, we're not going to tolerate the talks and the fake governance no more in this country, man.
All right. Thank you, caller. I appreciate that. Lots of talk. My callers seem to be really considering independent candidates. Again, I feel like we hear this every election. We've heard it every election, especially for the last three election with the advent of the DNA. What happens in the voting booth, though, seems to conflict with what we hear on the streets right up until election. We have one more caller on the line. Caller, go ahead. This is The Revolution. You're live.
Yes. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good afternoon.
Yeah, my comments only in reference to third parties right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is the fact that with the country being in the state that it's in, a third party is much more than just its leader. And you got to get to know the team. If we're in an economic crisis, a health crisis, a leadership crisis, a union crisis, and you have to try and pull this country back together, I really feel a hesitant that I would just put some newcomers in there who have no experience in governance, none who has no international relationship, to just go in there and to try and learn and to find their way while the country burns down.
Mm-hmm.
We are just at a state in this country right now where we just can't vote on emotionalism because we figure this party did this or this or that. But we got to look at the best team, someone who knows just saying what we can do, but how we can do it. Somebody that has the relationships and the expertise within the certain areas in which it's happening in this country. We have to vote based on how best individuals can get this country back together. I hear a lot of people talk, well, this one thing can give you 100,000 and this one can give you 300,000. We have to look and see whether or not that is possible. We already have in existence a sovereign wealth fund. It's just a matter of how we're going to go about getting the world into that fund. And so I think, like, right now the state the country is in, the multiplicity of crises, are we going to put some novices in there who we don't even know who their team is to be able to specialize and so they can be able to bring this country back in accordance? Because they give some story of, I wouldn't say some story because everybody should be sharing in the wealth, but I think we need the expertise and the leadership to guide us out of what we're in right now.
All right. Thank you, caller. This is a very salient point. And again, it must be on the minds of voters. I was talking to a client of ours in Trinidad and Tobago who believes that all of the elections that happened this year in particular in the region and over the course of the last year was really focused on people deciding who can lead their countries, who has the best leadership skills, the toolbox to lead their countries out of the economic crisis that was brought on by the pandemic, right? And that is where context for an election matters. The caller makes a very interesting point. Do you want the devil you know, right, who comes with experience on how to run government and make things work? Perhaps not especially good experience, but at least experience on how to design policy and implement policy, who has international relationships that they can bring to the forefront, that they can leverage for the benefit of the Bahamian people in this moment. Do you want that, or is it more important now to completely shift the way we think about leadership, governance, and invite new people to come in and try their hand, the devil you don't know, right? We got one more caller on the line. Caller, you are live. This is The Revolution. Go for it.
Yes, thank you so much.
No worries.
The caller did make a point, so therefore, let's have a coalition then. Let's have people who have been there, who know what they're doing, but whose heart is for the country.
Mm.
And let's have some newbies come in who has new bright ideas.
Mm.
Let's give them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
When you're tired of what you've been getting, get something different.
Mm.
And maybe it may be a fresh wind blowing for everyone and more Commonwealth for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. This is really interesting, actually. So for a coalition government including who? Made up of what? Again, elections are won on the math. So unless Bahamians are ready and willing to go to the voting booth to support third parties, this is all a pipe dream. The idea of a coalition is a pipe dream. And from what we have seen over the last two elections, when Bahamians go into the booth, they almost inevitably land back right where we started with parties A and party B. We are going to a break, and I believe the news at 1 p.m. Stay tuned, stick around. We have Bernice Joaquin from NAD. We have Michael Mora coming on from Nassau Cruise Port. They're going to talk about travel, tourism, and what it means for the Bahamian economy in the context of COVID-19 and the way forward. Please stick around, listen to the news, and we'll be right back after that. Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back. This is The Revolution. I am Joey Gaskin, sitting in for Juan McCartney while he is out celebrating his 56th birthday. It is a pleasure to be here with you today. I don't know if you guys were listening last Friday, but last Friday I split the show between some hot topic discussion, specifically on the vaccines and the COVID-19 pandemic in the Bahamas. And then I had the directors from the Ministry of Financial Services, Trade and Industry on to talk about our second industry, right? Our second most important industry and the work that ministry has been doing throughout the course of the pandemic, but also to prepare financial services, to prepare our trade and industry sectors for success as we begin to move out of this pandemic. I got a lot of text messages and calls after that show saying that it was really informative. People did not know that government was doing that much, that all of this work is happening behind the scenes. And so I thought it would be interesting today to turn to our number one industry, to turn to our number one sector, and specifically to talk to the two giants, right? And the movers and shakers that are responsible for our air arrivals, our airport, and our seaport, right? I thought that this would be an interesting discussion because we're talking a lot about a tourism revival. We are hearing, statements around economic revivals, particularly in some of our target markets. And at the same time, there are states, there are cities contending with the Delta virus. They are contending with surges in cases. There is still an economic crisis that is ongoing. And so I wanted to talk a little bit to Fernice Joaquin, who is the CEO of the Nassau Airport Development Company, and Mr. Michael Mora, who is the CEO of the Nassau Cruise Port, talk a little bit about what this moment has been like for them, how they are preparing these two ports of entry, or how they have prepared these two ports of entry to deal with the context in which travel is happening, and also to talk about how they are setting themselves up and the organizations that they help to run for a future or ongoing tourism boom and what happens once we leave the pandemic. So I believe I have them on the line. I want to make sure that they get to say hello. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. Welcome to The Revolution. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. I'm here.
Thank you very much. I'm here as well.
Good to be with you.
Great. It's great to have you guys on. And, you know, I also want to let our listeners know that, particularly for Mr. Mora, this is short notice, and he didn't hesitate to be on the show today with us, with me. And so we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedules to talk to us today. I want to start with Ms. Joaquin. I travel at least 2 weeks out of the month, usually. I got back from New York last week, and the airport was jam-packed. I mean, I came up those stairs where you walk through the Hall of Fame there, the Athletes Hall of Fame, Hall of Champions, I think it's called, went up the stairs and literally flabbergasted by the line in immigration. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on at the airport right now and what you believe is driving this huge amount of traffic to Nassau's airport.
Well, again, thank you for having me on. I'm happy to be able to report that this summer has been quite busy for the airport for a couple of reasons. The summer, obviously, in terms of timing, we're benefiting from a lot of pent-up demand. People who could not travel last year for their, you know, usual family vacation and for other reasons, destination weddings and so on, we're finding that with the wide distribution of vaccines globally, that they were able to get on a plane safely, comfortably, and travel to destinations like the Bahamas, where we were open and willing to accept them under certain conditions which they could deliver, such as being vaccinated and so on. Once we relaxed that particular requirement to allow people who are fully vaccinated and who could prove it that they passed their immunity period and all of that, you know, we saw the demand immediately ramp up. And demand simply means that there, you know, there's a product or service that you're offering that consumers are willing to pay for. They desire it based on what you're promoting, and they're responding to it by being willing to pay for it. And the Bahamas has always had an advantage being as close as we are to the U.S. East Coast. And that continues to serve us well because people can generally get here in a relatively short period of time, a 2.5-hour flight from New York, for example, hour and a half or less than 2 hours from Atlanta. And these are major hubs, obviously, for the airlines that serve us. So I don't know, Mr. Gaskins, if you came through on a Saturday.
I came through on a Thursday, which is why Thursday, I was also surprised. But
So Thursday has actually proven to be an extremely important arrivals day for us. There are people who typically would take, you know, a long weekend and they arrive on a Thursday and they leave Saturday or a Sunday. And so, so that would explain that. So you would have had the benefit of coming in on a day when everybody else thought they'd come in for a long weekend. And so it's a really nice situation. I will say, though, I have to put this into context because I don't want you to think that because the immigration hall was that busy that, you know, these are the numbers we would have been seeing back in 2019 or pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. They're not quite there yet. Mm. The number of airline seats coming into LPIA, we've achieved about, we're off, let me just put it this way in simpler terms, we're off of 2019 seat capacity by about 30%.
Okay.
So, you know, we're really pleased with that because, mm-hmm. quite frankly, a year ago, you know, we were down to, you know, we were off by 95%, right?
Yeah.
So everything's relative. And so we're really pleased to be approaching the 2019 levels in terms of seats coming in. Mm-hmm. And what is good about that is that those seats are coming in generally very full.
Yes.
The load factors for the airlines between 85 and 95%. And so they're very pleased with that. And airlines pay close attention to load factors, mm-hmm. because it is indicative of the demand. If
right.
people really want to come to a particular destination, they start searching, they go to the airlines to see if they can book a seat and if they can afford that seat. And as those seats fill up, the airlines realize that there's still a lot of time left. Mm-hmm. There's obviously some interest here. Let me add some more seats. So
right.
they will upgauge the aircraft or put in an additional flight and so on. So we've seen a lot of that happening. So
great.
We're really pleased with how the airlines have responded to the demand. And that's what accounts for what you experienced as you came through.
Yep. That's amazing to hear. I mean, again, you know, it is relative. I said when I hosted this show last Friday that for the first time perhaps in Bahamian history, last year you had a minister of tourism stand up in parliament and say there will be no tourism, right? That was a huge moment, I think. And again, pitting these numbers against each other in a relative way, we can see that demand picking up. One of the primary drivers of our tourism sector, though, particularly in the last decade, I think, perhaps decade and a half or two decades, has been cruise ship passengers, right? And, you know, we've heard in the last month a number of the usual cruise lines announced getting back into the water. They're sailing again. They are on top of that. We have a lot of ongoing cruise developments happening that's driving foreign direct investment in the Bahamas. Not just our Nassau cruise port, but destinations in the south of Eleuthera and in Grand Bahama. So, Mr. Maher, tell us a little bit about what's happening at the cruise port and what you're seeing as cruise lines begin to sail again.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you inviting me. And I would just like to mention to Vernice that if she has any capacity issues, we have these big ships coming from Miami and she can always direct her passengers to the water. So, these are interesting times and they are times filled with opportunity and challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately for us in the cruise sector, and those of us, you know, here in Nassau, you know, we've had the excitement of, you know, building a first class cruise port waterfront destination that will be completed in 2022. And it's, you know, it's going to be on the level of when Vernice, you know, stood there and looked at her brand new airport.
Mm.
After we, for so many decades, you know, had moved through something that was less than what we all deserved as Bahamians.
Less than ideal. Yeah.
Right. And so I can't, you know, it also reminds me of that day, you know, back, I think it was around 1999, give or take a year, when Atlantis opened for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact that Atlantis has had on our economy,
mm-hmm.
On Vernice's, you know, business of air travel. And so I, you know, here in the cruise sector, we've been going great guns. We're about 75% through our marine works. And so what does that mean? That means that we'll have close to 2,600 feet of bulkhead on our north side, which will allow us to put two Oasis class ships, you know, end to end, you know, mm-hmm. or today we have the Mardi Gras, which is Carnival Cruise Line's newest vessel. It's the LNG ship that they have.
Okay.
That ship's in port today with about 3,500 passengers. And that ship can carry around 6,500 passengers. So she's just over 50% occupancy. So we could literally put two Mardi Gras or two Oasis. Yesterday we had the Symphony of the Seas, which is an Oasis class ship. We're also extending what we call berth one. That berth will go and be about 1,400 feet in length, and we'll also be able to handle an Oasis and a Mardi Gras. All in all, we'll be able to have six ships in port at the same time with a passenger daily capacity of over 33,000 persons coming to visit our shores and spend money and enjoy our wonderful Bahamas. We have started our upland phase. So while we're still about 6 months away from completing the marine works, although by the end of this year, this calendar year, we'll be using all of our six berths. So in December, you will see six large ships out in the port at Nassau Cruise Port. On the upland side, we've started works on our arrivals terminal, which is about 30,000 feet in size. It's going to house our offices, Bahamas Customs, Bahamas Immigration. We have medical facilities designed into this this new arrivals terminal, you know, given what COVID has introduced and the need to be able to provide additional medical support,
right,
as well as testing. We then have a marketplace area, which will support the tenants that were operating from within and around Festival Place back in 2019. We have a town center that will have about five food and beverage and six retail, all authentically Bahamian. We have a impact theater, a coral reef exhibit.
Okay.
We have an art exhibit, and Antonius Roberts is our curator there. And that's intended to allow Bahamian artists to feature their works, to sell their works, but equally of importance is also to complete their works in front of our guests, you know, and I'm a big proponent of that in that if I have that opportunity to actually meet the young man or the young woman or, you know, the person, individual that's creating that work and understand, you know, where they were coming from at the time that they were, you know, putting that piece together.
Right.
I'm more inclined to spend, you know, much more than I otherwise would have had it, you know, been hanging on the wall competing with the next piece. So I think bringing the artist together with the consumer, with our visitor and with Bahamians, because that's a big part of our waterfront project, is that we are moved the construction fence, or rather the ISPS fence, the national kind of security boundary for port operations. We've moved that line to within 50 feet of the cruise ship in our new world. Whereas before, the cruise passenger, you know, could literally stay within the gates and not venture into downtown. But equally unfortunate is that if Bernice wanted to take her family down to buy something from this authentic Bahamian artist, she would not have been able to. And so in the future, with the relocation of that fence, Bernice is going to be able to come down to the Nassau waterfront and enjoy everything that our visitors enjoying, and as well as entertainment, music, great food, wonderful art, jewelry, and everything else that's authentic to us, and do it right on the water. And so we're so excited about it.
This sounds really exciting, and I have to say that I'm especially interested in this because I, you know, took the opportunity to buy cruise port bonds, you know, at the beginning of this process. Before I move on, because I have some questions around, I mean, it sounds amazing, the orange economy stuff, the cultural stuff. There's something that came up yesterday, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, Mr. Mora, but I'm just wondering what your take on this is. Yesterday, new emergency orders came out requiring cruise line passengers over the age of 12 to be vaccinated. I know that there is some conflict there, or I believe that there's some conflict there with Florida law. Any insight on what's going on there?
Yeah, well, I would say, first of all, back in June, on June 12th, when the Adventure of the Seas began her home port operations here in Nassau, and I'm sure Bernice can relate to this, you know, we have spent so much time as operators looking at our facilities and doing what we have to do to mitigate the spread of COVID And so much of my focus was, you know, on land. And so my wife and I purchased, you know, two tickets on board the Adventure because I wanted to be able to experience firsthand what those protocols on the ship were going to be like to better understand, you know, if I could call it kind of the health chain or the health travel chain, you know, because we're only one component
right.
of that travel experience.
Yes.
And I must say that, you know, the cruise lines have been very effective. So if you're in Florida today and you're boarding a Royal ship, as an example, they will invite you today or yesterday to disclose whether you're not vaccinated.
Mm.
And so if you had refused to answer the question, no problem. In the past, what they would have done is they would have said that anyone that doesn't provide proof will be, you know, deemed to be unvaccinated, in which case the testing protocol is different than that of a vaccinated person. So the unvaccinated or deemed to be unvaccinated person would have had to have that PCR test prior to boarding that ship.
Right.
They would have then been subjected to antigen tests while on board the ship. They would have been subject to other tests and other requirements while on that itinerary, to include face masks. If, however, you were vaccinated, you were only required to have an antigen test prior to boarding the ship. And the protocols are, you know, a little more relaxed for that vaccinated person.
Right.
So they also have been sailing at around 90 to 95% fully vaccinated. And part of that, a big part of that, has been driven by the CDC. So when the CDC met with the industry and said, you know, that we're prepared to give you, a sailing permit, a conditional sailing permit, the industry had, or the lines themselves had, two opportunities to select. One was which they, if they were going to go down the road of going through simulation exercises, and what those simulation exercises were, is that the ship sails and the CDC is auditing and monitoring how that ship performs while it's sailing, how it's going to manage those testing and service protocols, the health protocols. And if they went through that, then the cruise line was not going to be held strictly to 95% of the passenger population. If the cruise line opted not to do the simulation, then the cruise line would have to guarantee that 95% of all passengers, regardless of age, regardless of medical condition,
wow.
would have to be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
What our protocol today is, as per the emergency powers of yesterday, is that, you know, those persons that do not have a legitimate reason to not be vaccinated must be vaccinated if they wish to cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And I support that. And the reason I support that, because early, just a few minutes ago, I was talking about the 3,500 passengers that are on the Mardi Gras.
Right.
And the fact that Mardi Gras can carry 6,000 passengers.
Mm.
So if the cruise line is able to, you know, have much greater herd immunity on that ship as a result of the overwhelming majority of persons being vaccinated,
mm-hmm.
then what we will see is that occupancy number go from the 3,500 passengers to 4,000 to 4,500 to 5,000.
Yeah.
And we all benefit from that, mm-hmm. right? Because it's the passenger that spends the money in the economy, not
right.
the ship.
Exactly. Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that explanation. I think one of the things that I'm hearing is a really thoughtful approach by cruise lines and the CDC to make this all work, which is really key for our economy. I'm curious, Ms. Joaquin, while we have you on the line, what was it like putting together protocols for the airport? You know, you're dealing with, like the cruise port, you're dealing with a number of different brands who are coming from different countries, perhaps, dealing with international protocols, cross-border protocols, but also needing to secure not just the airport, but the airport as a gateway to Bahamian communities, right? So tell me a little bit about what that process was like, getting your protocols together and the work that you really put in to making sure that as a gateway, you were keeping Bahamian communities safe.
Right. Well, so Mike and I both served on a couple of national committees that were charged with developing, I guess, strategies for the recovery of the Bahamian economy, right? Given, you know, obviously the importance of tourism, whether air or cruise tourism, to the economy of the Bahamas. One of the first things we did was to develop those protocols. And, you know, Lyndon Pinning International Airport being obviously the largest airport in the country, we determined that we needed to identify all of the touch points that would matter, but that would also be consistent with global standards. So we relied very heavily on CDC guidance, as well as you'll be aware that our airport is a part of the Vantage Airport Network. I'm a Vantage executive, for example. And so I was able to draw upon what Vantage was doing at other airports in its portfolio, so that, again, we would be consistent with best practices and also be mindful of the requirements of regulatory bodies, advisory bodies like Airports Council International and so on. So we looked at a whole laundry list of what are the things we need to do in order to protect airport employees, but also protect passengers as they moved through the terminal facilities. So we started with what that list would look like in terms of plexiglass barriers. We ended up installing well over 150 plexiglass barriers at all ticket counters and security checkpoints and everything. We had to look at physical distancing markers, placing them on the floor to guide people as to how to stand safely away from others. We removed some seats or identified seats that people should not use just to provide that distance at the gates. We looked at all of the hand sanitizer stations. We ended up putting in more than 50 of those across all of our terminals. Signage requiring people to put on a mask and keep it on while they're in the terminals. We did temperature screening for inbound passengers. We did all kinds of things, fogging to sanitize the facilities on a regular schedule. Cleaning of all of the touch points like, you know, the escalator handrails, door handles, elevator buttons, and so on. So we put all this stuff together in a document which was shared with everybody in the airport community so that they understood what was going to be done by NAD as the operator, but also where they participated in terms of what they needed to do to manage their staff, their team members, and to get them to comply with these requirements. We were so successful that actually the airport won airport health accreditation by the Airports Council International last summer because we clearly had demonstrated that we met the standards that were recognized globally for a safe and healthy environment at airports for people to walk and move through.
It's incredible.
So we were really pleased to have been able to meet that standard, but it took a collective effort. My team worked really, really hard to develop these protocols, and we shared all of these protocols with airports around the country. Mike and I were part of a subgroup that worked on ports, which were inclusive, obviously, of airports and cruise ports and marinas and so on. And so there were a lot of common elements that we developed, but it all worked.
That's great.
You know, we're in a position now where I think, generally speaking, people would agree that the airport we've maintained those standards. We continue to uphold those standards because clearly, you know, with an uptick in cases everywhere, including here, it has become even more important for us to make sure that those standards are in place.
Great. Thank you very much for that, Ms. Joaquin. We're going to go right to a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the future. Where do you see us going next at these two very important, these vital, crucial ports of entry here in the Bahamas? And what should Bahamians be doing, right, as we move through these ports, as we see the uptick in tourism? What should we be doing to help you guys at the various ports prepare yourselves, stay safe, keep your employees safe, and ensure that our community stays safe? We're going to be right back after this break. Stick around. This is The Revolution. We'll be back.
Break breakfast just got better at Wendy's. Introducing the Breakfast Biggie Bag. Enjoy a double sausage muffin with two square sausage patties, a freshly cracked egg, and cheese served on a toasted English muffin, a medium waffle fries, and an orange juice for only $5.25, fat inclusive. Add an apple pie for just $1 more.
Say what?
At Wendy's, better breakfast is all day. Offers valid in participating locations. Wendy's, different inside and out.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises customers and residents of Corridor Avenue between Market Street and Blue Hill Road that the corporation will be carrying out improvement works for 15 days from August 18, 2021 to September 6, 2021 from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily. As a result, customers should note that they may experience some interruption in water supply, and residents and the general public should note that there will be interruptions in traffic flow around the work area daily, resulting in traffic diversions. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused as they work to improve their level of service.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time, and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Many people wonder, what makes Boost Academy unique? Maybe it's our 8-to-1 student-staff ratio, the emphasis we place on student individuality, our focus on numeracy, literacy, and creating better citizens by sharpening students' critical thinking skills. One of our many talented teachers, program facilitators, and mentors. Or just maybe it is our commitment to taking full responsibility for your child's education, no hidden fees or costs. Regardless of what it is, let us help your child reach their full potential. Boost Academy is currently enrolling students of grades 4 through 12. Visit www.boostbahamas.com to apply now.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Revolution. This is Joey Gaskin sitting in for Juan McCartney, who is out celebrating his 62nd birthday. Happy birthday, Juan. I hope you are enjoying your feet being kicked up, enjoying your time with the family. We have on the show in this last hour, Vernice Joaquin, the CEO of the Nassau Airport Development Company, as well as Mike Mora, who is the CEO of the Nassau Cruise Port. I want to start again with you, Mr. Mora. We hear quite a bit that cruise passengers are perhaps not our, not the gold mine of tourism that we want them to be. We know that demand for cruise lines are starting to pick up as people understand the protocols, as tourism just starts to get back to normal or is moving in that direction. I just want you to tell us a little bit about, as you prepare to open the new Nassau Cruise Port, I believe you said in 2022, what trends are you seeing that you want Bahamians to be mindful of in the cruise industry? What do you think is important for them to know as we move into this new kind of era in the cruise industry in the Bahamas?
Sure. Thank you. Some of the conversations I've already started having and have been having with my team, first and foremost, is to recognize that as consumers, we all have choices. Mm. And there is no one's obligated to come to Nassau. No one's obligated to spend the dollar that they've worked so hard to earn. And you know, there's a direct relationship between our approach to and how we approach the consumer and the amount of money they spend. Mm. And while, you know, I agree that it will likely never happen to where a cruise passenger is going to represent the same dollar spend as the air land tourist. The fact is that we have, what do we have going for us on the cruise side of things is the numbers. Mm. And, you know, in 2019, we were pretty close to 4 million passengers. On a passenger spend basis, the Bahamas ranks a little lower than 50% on the scale of what passengers spend throughout the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to get even within 20 bucks of the best performers, which are St. Martin and the U.S. Virgin Islands,
mm-hmm.
we could easily add $100 to what we presently enjoy per passenger. And if we just take the 4 million people that would have come to us in 2019, 4 million times $100 is $400 million.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's not happening one time. You know, mm-hmm. that's an annual opportunity. Right. So you have this opportunity. So we talk about where, you know, where do we need to go? Well, one, we have this opportunity of at least just, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. Let's try and do what St. Martin does and what USVI does. But what's happening right now is that we are spending, and thank you for the investment confidence that you've had in SR Cruise Port, but we are spending close to $300 million on our waterfront. And as I mentioned, what's really important is that fence, and that fence is only going to be up next to the ship in order to comply with international port and security requirements, port facility requirements. But those passengers, as they debark those ships, are going to be coming into downtown. Mm-hmm. They're going to be coming into our area. And again, we have specifically focused and committed ourselves to supporting authentically Bahamian experiences. Because we feel that we can do our best to promote downtown by adding something a little different than what downtown already has.
Mm.
And so our focus is on, you know, something authentically Bahamian. So you talk about what can people do. I had a meeting last week with a lady that's into, her family's been, she's like third, fourth generation into straw. And the fact is that what she makes is phenomenal, but she is limited based off one, this profession, I'm sad to say, based off what she reported, is not something that, you know, we're not going into schools apparently,
right.
And we're not, you know, promoting mm-hmm. These things that are, you know, special to us. And so what we're finding is that, you know, every 10 or 20 years, we're losing some of these artisans mm-hmm. that have this experience and this knowledge that's gone, you know, that they've got from their grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the fear and concern I have is that, you know, where does that take us? Where does that leave us? It leaves us at a place where potentially everything we're selling, you can also get in Miami, you can also get in New York, you can also get in Cayman, you can also get in St. Thomas. And then at that point, it's a race to the bottom on price.
Right.
Whereas if we do what we can do and show our best in something that's unique, that's where that opportunity is. And we will exceed the $100, the $100 incremental rise on the passenger spend just by doing something different.
Yeah.
But at the same time, having an attitude of being grateful, being grateful that these people have chosen to come to our shores, that they could have gone someplace else. And, you know, and having a respectful engagement with these consumers.
Mm-hmm. I noticed when we were talking earlier and you were describing the various facilities at the cruise port, there was a lot of focus. I encapsulated it in the term orange economy stuff, right? But cultural, right? Things, authentic Bahamian products, which is something that you repeated again. Is there some market data, some analysis that is telling you that is what cruise passengers really want when they get off the ship, or is that intuition?
Well, the part of it is driven directly by the origins of Festival Place in that in its beginnings, and I wasn't a part of it. I'm relaying what I've learned.
Right.
But my understanding is that when it started, it was intended to be a trade facility of Bahamian, you know, entrepreneurs, things that were Bahamian. And based off what I've heard, even from tourism, is, you know, we lost our way. And, you know, we found ourselves at a place where, you know, people were, unfortunately, there wasn't enough, I don't think there was sufficient management,
right,
how things were being sold, what was being sold, whether in fact it was Bahamian, not Bahamian. And then, you know, once you end up, you know, putting a carving or a piece of art that someone has put many hours into and their perspiration is, you know, sprinkled on top of that carving because of all the sweat and time. Mm-hmm. And then you put something that, you know, is mass produced in China, right, next to it, mm-hmm, you know, and, you know, the Bahamian piece is $139 and the made in China piece is
$29.99. Right.
You know, it's a race to the bottom.
Right.
And so our approach is that, you know, if you want to find that $29.99, I'm sure it will exist, you know, in Nassau someplace, mm-hmm, but it's not going to happen with us. Hmm. We want our footprint. And I got to back up so that you help, I can explain why I can be so confident.
Yeah.
The way we have structured our business model is that 90% of our income and what will pay you your interest on your investment comes from the passenger traffic off the ship, okay? The landing fee. It's not coming from rents.
Yeah.
All right. So it's what we're doing is investing in the upland, creating this new wonderful experience, these many new places for Bahamian entrepreneurs to operate from. But we pay our bills based off the number of passengers. So we are focusing on creating a destination which is different, unique, not something that is easily replicated someplace else, as well as we're trying to pull people out of Atlantis, we're trying to pull people out of Bahamar, and we want Vernice and her family and me and my family and mm-hmm, you and your family to want to come down to Nassau Cruise Port to either eat, to listen to music, to, you know, get your face painted, whatever, yeah, the deal is, and also shop on Bay Street.
Yes.
Because it's not about... we don't want a tourism survey to say we loved Nassau Cruise Port. Mm-hmm. We want the tourism survey to say we love Nassau.
So, yeah, I think that's key. I have a similar question for Ms. Joaquin. You know, we are eking our way out of the pandemic now. The hope is that through the multiple tools at our disposal, vaccination, continued mask wearing, that we can eventually put this behind us. What is the future looking like for Nat as we look to the horizon of this pandemic? What can Bahamians expect? New airlines coming, new travel routes. Is there anything that we should be looking forward to coming from Nat?
Yeah, certainly. I'm pleased to say that, you know, even during this pandemic, mm-hmm, we've had, you know, new service that's shown up. We had Frontier launch their new service out of Miami in June, mm-hmm, and they've already announced that in November they will be adding service out of, I think it's Philadelphia and I think it's Newark. Mm. I need to double check that. Mm-hmm. New Jersey, Newark, mm-hmm, right. We also have had Virgin Atlantic announce new service starting in November, and I think that this is really significant because it's taken the Ministry of Tourism a couple of years to finalize its negotiation with Virgin because, you know, as Virgin is a long haul,
yes,
low cost carrier,
mm-hmm,
which is a little bit of an anomaly, right?
Mm-hmm.
A low cost,
long haul, yes, carrier. Oxymoron almost, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. It's a strange animal, and so it required some careful negotiations in order to make sure that the Virgin customer, the Virgin passenger, mm-hmm, is a good Bahamas visitor. Mm. You have to make sure that you have the products that they're looking for,
yes,
excuse me, in terms of facilities and so on and so forth, at a price point that makes sense for them. Mm-hmm. So the long and short of it is that we were pleased that Virgin has agreed that they will inaugurate service in November. So that gives travelers from the UK lots of options, and it also allows British Airways, which actually has significant feed beyond London Heathrow Airport, mm-hmm, to bring in, you know, that many more people from continental Europe through its London Heathrow, wow, hub. Mm-hmm. So we're really pleased at the additional seats that this represents for us from that part of the world. So I think that it's testament to the confidence that people have in the Bahamas product,
right,
that these airlines are looking at additional service or new service, new routes. Well, in these instances, they're not new routes. They're routes that are already being served, mm-hmm. but where there's obviously sufficient demand that they see an opportunity to add that much more capacity in these through these gateways. So we're really pleased about that. But I think it's important for me to just make one statement, and sure. It supports a lot of what Mike just said, which is that, you know, I think that there has to be a recognition by Bahamians that people do not have to travel to the Bahamas. They don't have to travel to Nassau and Paradise Island. They choose to do so, and we ought to appreciate that for what it is. Mm-hmm. We've been benefiting from a long track record of success in tourism. Right. We're a very well-known destination. We're really still the first place that many Americans choose to travel to when they make their first foreign trip. Mm-hmm. Because we're so well-known, we're close by, you know, English is spoken here, yeah. The U.S.
currency,
here, mm-hmm. all of those things mm-hmm. that are important. But we've also had a long track record of dealing well with crises. I mean, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, economic recessions, hurricanes that come through and do damage. We've had issues with, you know, pandemics before, like SARS and so on, but nothing of this scale.
Yes.
So I think that one thing that the COVID pandemic has taught us is that we also can get through a major crisis like COVID. Mm-hmm. Because last year, when this pandemic was first pronounced as a pandemic, mm-hmm. back in March,
yes.
Nobody thought it would last this long. No. Everybody thought
no one.
three to six months and yes. we'll have our together and we'll right. be back to normal, right?
Right?
But then suddenly here we are 18 months later and, you know, people are, you cannot really defend against another person being the threat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this pandemic has taught us. COVID right. has demonstrated that we are a threat to each other.
Yes.
It's yep. not a weather system or no. an economic
It's not
system.
This external thing, it's you know, environmental thing. Yeah, right. yeah, yeah.
And that's the reason it has lasted so long. Mm. And so I think we need to recognize that in the same way that the COVID virus or the coronavirus has evolved and mutated, and it's showing up in all these different variants. Mm-hmm. The future is probably going to look somewhat like this from time to time. Mm. You know, there will be other things like this that pop up. And so we have yeah. to determine how resilient we are.
Yeah.
I think as an airport, we certainly have demonstrated that we will respond appropriately to any kind of crisis that comes our way. And I know that that is true also for the cruise port that Mike and his team are mm-hmm. developing. So the Bahamas is lucky to have, I think, experienced tourism and economic professionals who understand that we need to do certain things in order to ensure that we are resilient. And I continue to say that tourism is probably the most resilient industry in the world because it's been beaten up and battered by all kinds of things,
yeah.
9/11 and all these other yeah. things I mentioned before, recessions and so on. And it continues to bounce back mm-hmm. and bounce back better
mm-hmm.
because we learn from the core issues at the during the crisis and we figure out how to address them
yeah.
and we get better. So I'm very optimistic about the future of tourism in this country. I'm very optimistic. And I'm excited about the Nassau Cruise Port. I mean, I've been in this business so long, I can't tell you how excited I am that we are finally at a point where we can look forward within the next year or so mm-hmm. to a new cruise port
yep.
so that at the airport, the cruise port, and in between with our hotels and all the Airbnbs mm-hmm. that have popped up and continue to pop up, I think this destination will be humming on all cylinders, and I'm really, really excited about the future.
If you're out there listening, I mean, I'm in the studio, absolutely teeming for a couple of reasons. One, it sounds like as Bahamians, we should really be proud that, you know, these international brands who are almost always concerned about liability, right? Always concerned about protecting their brand and the passengers that rely on them to get them from one place to the next safely and to enjoy that travel, that they have invested so much confidence that, you know, for a number of cruise lines, the Bahamas was their first stop, right? As they got back into the water. And from what we've heard today, even during the pandemic, discussions have been happening around new routes, when folks were going to get back to flying, that they would come to the Bahamas, and that our airport has been awarded by an international organization. So I think the first thing is that we should just be proud as Bahamians at how these industries are managing, how these organizations are managing the crisis. I think the second thing is, it seems like there's a lot of things to be excited about right now. Like we've got a really bright future ahead when it comes to the tourism industry. Before we go, Mr. Moore, I have one question from the text messages. When will the low-cost stocks be available for Bahamians to invest in? Is a question that I've got at the Nassau Cruise Port. Can you give us some detail about that before we wrap up?
Yes, sure. Mike. I want to know that one too.
Me too.
Go ahead. So October will be the month that we come out with the opportunity to purchase equity. So that will be the month. But if you'd allow me, I just want to emphasize and piggyback off what Bernice was saying very quickly, and that is that, you know, we, unfortunately, this virus has you know, caused us to kind of look at one another. And I was reading on yalemedicine.org, you know, and they had 5 points, you know, and the 5 points are: Delta is more contagious than the other virus strains. They spoke of the unvaccinated people are at risk. Again, unvaccinated people are at risk. That's the second point they have. The Delta could lead to hyper-local outbreaks. And what they refer to there is that cases where you do not have herd immunity because there isn't a sufficient number of your population that's been vaccinated.
Right.
And then they talk about, there is still more to learn about the Delta, but they mention here, for example, that the Pfizer vaccine was 88% effective against symptomatic disease and 96% effective against hospitalization. So the Pfizer vaccine that we have today can mitigate this Delta.
Mm-hmm.
And they said here, vaccination is the best protection against the Delta.
Yeah.
And for two tourism people like Bernice and myself, collectively, when in Nassau alone, you know, we'll handle 6 million plus guests.
Incredible.
You know, do yourself a favor. Get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do yourself a favor. Do your community a favor. Do our economy, your family, and our economy a favor by going out there. Now we have choice. You know, if you were afraid of AstraZeneca, you have Pfizer, you have other options. And in fact, this is my last time hosting the show on a Friday. I think Juan's going to be back from his 67th birthday next week.
He's going from 56 to 62 to 67, okay.
My final word as I sign off is, I understand people's concerns, but I want to encourage all Bahamians to go out there and get vaccinated. Protect yourselves, protect your family, protect all of us by taking that very important step. It was an absolute pleasure having both Bernice Joaquin on today and you as well, Mr. Mora, to talk about what's going on at our two most important ports here in Nassau. Thank you for your time. Thank you for all the information. And it was a pleasure being on with you guys. Thank you, Bahamas. It's been fun. Have a great weekend. This is The Revolution. I'm signing off.